Well, shalom, Havarim. Hello, friends. It's good to be back with you after being gone last weekend. Sonia, the kids, and I took an extended weekend trip to Ohio. We had a few stops along the way. I'll tell you a little bit more about that. But it was really good. I got to spend some time with family and friends, see some people I hadn't seen in a number of years. And it's always good when I'm away to know that things are in good hands here. Thank you, Garland, for lining up Eric Cotting. Were you here for Eric's presentation last week? Eric, the principal at Blue Ridge Christian High School, shared a sermon, and I just thought it was something that I needed to hear, and I'm going to guess that many people here also needed to hear something along those lines. And whether you agreed with him or not, you probably felt the same way. He brought a fresh perspective. And if you didn't get to hear that, I encourage you to go onto our website. You can download that. You can stream it. You can do whatever fancy things you need to do. The ironic thing is that I listened to last week's sermon while I was working on my parents' farm by streaming it on my smartphone. And you know that's kind of ironic if you were here because he spoke on what? Technology. Okay. All right. I kind of thought that would get a few more giggles. Okay. but, you know, we left for Ohio, and we left in the middle of what, the great flood of 2018. It rained a lot. We left Thursday evening, drove up the interstate through this rain, got to Ohio. It was still kind of cool and damp, and we spent some time there. And then we come back to Virginia, and what do we find? It's hot. I mean, it's that time of year, as Glenn mentioned, it is the first Sunday of July. We are halfway through 2018, and it is just stinking hot. That is the appropriate meteorological term. It is not just hot, it is stinking hot. I don't know where to go with that. I would like to say something witty, but I don't know, John. Okay. Yes, it's stinking hot. And I just started thinking about physics a little bit. We know that warm air rises. It is less dense than cold air. But you know which is faster, warm or cold air? You know which is faster, heat or cold? No, heat is much faster than cold because you can catch a cold. All right, okay, there it is. As if that wasn't awkward enough, I'm going to make things even more awkward now. Yes, thank you. You say that now, we'll see if you continue to feel that way. I'm going to say two words, and these are probably words that you don't frequently hear from the pulpit. I can guarantee you Eric Cotting didn't say these two words last week. These two words are going to be a little bit awkward for most of us to hear, probably at least half of us to hear these words, and the other half is going to feel awkward because the other half feels awkward. But I'm going to say them now. We're going to put them out there. And when I say them, then when you come to it in the main part of our sermon, it won't be as awkward. That's my hope. That's my prayer. That's my dream. I'm going to say it now. So when we say it in the middle of the sermon, you won't feel a little bit strange about it. Those two words are menstruation and period. I'm going to go one more step further. I want you to say these words with me, okay? On the count of three, say these words. One, two, three. Menstruation and period. Raise your hand if that is the first time you have ever said the word menstruation out loud. There were a few hands raised. Raise your hand if that's the first time you've ever said menstruation in church. A few more going up. All right, so it is my understanding that menstruation is actually a huge topic in the Bible. It comes up quite a bit, especially in what we call the Old Testament. And sometimes, let's be honest, the Old Testament and the entire Bible can be kind of PG-13. And it can make some kind of weird conversations. Those of you that are looking forward to lunch with your children today, you're going to have some strange kind of talks. You know, Daddy, what is menstruation? And why do women's problems always seem to start with men? Okay. And I'm thinking that since this is such an important part of the Bible, that maybe the curriculum for 2018's Bible quizzing team should revolve around Leviticus chapter 15. Keep that in mind, just my suggestion. An entire chapter of the Bible, almost completely dedicated to what topic? menstruation and periods. Yes, all right. I'm not going to hold my breath for that one. But if I'm honest, this passage today, this isn't just about menstruation. And actually, it's not just about healing. Yes, indeed, you know, this is a passage about healing. And I'm glad that Susan chose to sing songs about healing and not songs about menstruation, because I'm not sure where she would find those. But it's more than just healing as well. Yes, there's healing that goes on, but this isn't a promise that if you just have faith in God, you will be healed. And we know that's not true. And we're going to talk more about that next week as well when we talk about Paul's thorn in his flesh. This is not a promise, just pray enough and you will be healed. This is a story about vulnerability. This is a story about Jesus crossing over boundaries. This is a story about how Jesus loves us so much that he will cross over these barriers that we have put in place to come and meet our needs. And no, he doesn't always meet the needs in the ways that we want him to, but he has always promised that he will come to us. So we're going to look today at these different aspects of vulnerability and crossing barriers. Now, the first one that I want to look at, it comes in the first verse from this section that Glenn read for us. And it's one that you may not even notice if you just skim through this passage. But the first thing that I notice in verse 21 is it says this: when Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, and then it goes on and tells a story. So clearly there's this physical barrier here. What is this barrier? It's a lake. That's a barrier. I don't easily go from one side of a lake to another. You need some sort of apparatus to get to the other side, a boat, a bridge, or you go around. That is a physical barrier. Now the lake that this is speaking of is what we commonly call the Sea of Galilee. And you have to kind of go back to the verses that come before this, earlier on in the chapter, to know just what's going on. So Jesus had been on the east side of the lake. I have no idea which way is which. He had been on the east side of the lake. West, right? Somebody? No? Okay, it doesn't matter. If you don't know, I'll pretend. We'll go this way. He was on the east side of the lake, and he crosses over to the west side. West side. Where he's saying about, I feel pretty in Maria. No, that's a different west side. Okay, so he crosses to the west side. And I'm not going to get you out of here on time. He crosses over to the west side, and that's where he has this encounter with the Gerasene demonic man. This is the guy that has a legion worth of demons within his body. So many that he refers to himself as legion, for we are many. People know this story because this is the guy that lived naked in a cemetery. Totally normal, right? He's so strong that he's breaking chains with his bare hands. They cannot bind him. Jesus comes to him, says, "Tell me your name. I am legion, for we are many." And Jesus does what? He casts those demons out. And everybody that has ever read through this passage remembers this part. Where does he cast these demons? Into pigs. And the pigs then run down the mountain. They jump off a cliff and they drown themselves. Growing up on the farm, my favorite animal was the pigs. So this one has always bothered me. And instead, I choose to go with the alternate happy ending. Most people don't realize pigs are actually very good swimmers. I don't know how they do with snorkels, though. All right, so this is what happens. And if you read this passage, you may start to wonder, well, wait a second, aren't pigs unclean? So why would a bunch of Jewish people be raising pigs? Well, I think that's one of the most important points of this one verse, is that these people, they weren't Jewish. When Jesus crossed over from the east side to the west side, he was crossing over from a Jewish territory to the Gentile territory. Cast the demons out of this man, and this man became one of the first missionaries to the Gentile people. So in many ways, this physical barrier of the lake served as a metaphorical barrier between Jew and Gentile. And what does Jesus do before we get out of the first verse of today's passage? He crosses over that barrier. All right, so Jesus goes from the west side, and he goes back to the east side, and he's getting out of his boat, and all at once he's surrounded by the people. People have heard what he's doing. Jesus has achieved rock star status. They've heard his name. They've seen what he's done. They want to see what they can get from him as well. And usually when we think about who Jesus ministers to, we think about the poor, we think about the broken, we think about the tax collectors and the sinners. But often he also ministers to the rich and the powerful. We think about people like Zacchaeus, who was clearly rich, Nicodemus, who was a Pharisee, Joseph of Arimathea, who had land and had property. So these are rich people that Jesus was ministering to as well. Well, in today's passage, the first guy that comes to Jesus is one of those rich guys also. His name, sometimes we mispronounce it. I'm not sure how to say it. I'm just going to say it with confidence and let's go with it. I think his name is something like Jairus. So Jairus comes to Jesus, and it says in the passage that Jairus is a leader of the local synagogue. Jairus has it together. On the outside, everybody would think this guy, he knows what he's doing. He's leading the synagogue. He's probably got a healthy, good-looking family. He's doing all right financially. His house is always clean. His gutters are never clogged with leaves, and there are never like issues there. This is a guy that's always doing well. But he comes to Jesus. He throws himself at his feet, and he seems to recognize Jesus has something that I need. There's something that he can give that I cannot provide for myself. So even though the rest of the world may think Jairus has it all together, Jairus says, no, no, no. My daughter's sick, and I'm completely helpless. There's nothing that I can do. And Jesus says, I will go with you. I will see your daughter, and let me help. Here's the second barrier that Jesus crosses. Here's this rich man, Jairus. Jesus was poor. Didn't even have a place to lay his head. Didn't have a home to call his own. And here he was crossing that rich and poor barrier. So Jesus starts to the home of Jairus. And as the people are crowding around, they hear what he's going to do. He's going to try to make this little girl well again. And they want to see that. I want to see that. I mean, it's better than most of the stuff you see on TV today. So yeah, I'm going to go follow them. I'm going to see what's going on. And all these people start pushing in on Jesus. And it says that one of these people was an unnamed woman. And we read this about this unnamed woman in verses 25 through 26. It says, and a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had, yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. So here's another division between the people, a socioeconomical division. Jairus has it all together. He looks like he's got it, like he's got things handled from a worldly perspective. Here's this woman who has spent all she has just trying to get well. And it says she's been bleeding for 12 years. Anybody really cut yourself badly? And you're like whenever I cut myself shaving, those cuts can bleed for a long time. And that's a huge inconvenience, isn't it? Now, sometimes I put that little bit of toilet paper on there, and after a few hours, I have to take it off, or I realize, you know, the next day I never did take that toilet paper off. Like, oh, man, what an inconvenience. That really hurt. I should do something about that. Whatever happened to that styptic pencil? I pay attention. That's a huge inconvenience to me, but this woman's bleeding was more than just an inconvenience. What most scholars believe, and here comes the big words, friends, most scholars believe that this woman was suffering from some sort of uterine hemorrhage. She was suffering from perpetual menstruation. She was going through this bleeding process day after day after day. And according to Leviticus chapter 15, any woman, when she has her period, is ceremonially unclean. Now, to be unclean, it does not mean you are a sinner. That's not the same thing. But it means that you must be separated out from the rest of the congregation and the rest of the people. To be unclean means that you cannot get one of those back rubs from Garland that he likes to come around and give. You can't get that because you don't touch people when you're unclean. It means that if somebody sat down, you can't sit where they sat. I'll be more specific. If somebody who is unclean sits down, you are not allowed to sit where they sat. You know what happens if you sit where they sat? You are unclean. If someone lies down and they have some sort of uncleanness about them, if they have their period, you cannot lay where they laid until the sheets have been washed. If you do touch that person, sit where they sat, lay where they laid, you become unclean yourself. Now, a few years ago, there was a book that was published, and I've referenced it before several years ago. It's an interesting book, and I know it's not everybody's cup of tea, but I found it interesting myself. I went back and read a few chapters this week. The book is called A Year of Biblical Womanhood, written by a Christian author named Rachel Held Evans. I'll specify again, she is a Christian author. And what she did was she went through the Bible, and she found some teachings that many Christians don't really practice today. And she decided that she was going to seek out people who did practice these things, and she was going to try to do them for a period of time herself. So what she did is she named 12 different practices that are not common in Christianity today, and she would dedicate 1 month to each of these practices. She would set goals for each month, and she would consult people from different faith traditions who did practice these somewhat obscure things. I'll give you an example. One of the months that she decided to live out, one of the practices she wanted to live out was a practice of modesty. And she had these listed as her goals for the month. The first was to dress modestly, based on the teaching from 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 9. To wear a head covering, like 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 6. You've probably heard this one before. To wear only dresses and skirts, no slacks or jeans. Again, for a woman, this was taught in Deuteronomy 22:5. Shall not dress like a man. Abstain from wearing jewelry. I see sinners out there, left and right. Sinners. And the final one was to hang out with the Amish. She looked at the Amish as an example of what it means to live modestly. So she went and she consulted Amish people. So this was one of the months. The month that I want to draw your attention to was one that was kind of awkward. In the month of April, the spring of the year, her practice was purity. Now, April is usually when you find things like Easter and the Jewish, not the Jewish equivalent, but at the same time, you'll have things like Passover. So one of the things, two of the goals that she had during this month in April was to eat kosher. She did not eat pork. She did not eat shellfish. She did not mix a kid with its milk, something like that. A lamb kid, just to be specific. And then she tried to eliminate all the yeast from her home during Passover. You read through Exodus, you'll find this practice. They got all the yeast out of their house because there wasn't time for the bread to rise. Awkward yet? No, not yet. Let's go one step further. During this month, she decided to observe the Levitical purity laws by undergoing 12 days of ritual impurity during menstruation and to camp out in the front yard for the first 3 days of impurity. Okay, now I've said it before, I'm going to say it again. She's not trying to mock any one tradition or Christianity in general or any person. She is a Christian, but she's simply trying to highlight these things that we don't do and trying to live into it. And let's be honest, she's trying to write something and sell a book too. So she's a wonderful writer. It's very interesting the way she writes. So when her time of the month comes, she decides that it's time to set up her tent. Oh, I should go back. Okay. This is something that's still practiced today in Orthodox Jewish traditions. It's called the Nedah. We should wake up a little bit. Everybody say Nedah.
Nedah.
Thank you. Nedah simply means to separate. And Held Evans writes this, when a woman is Nedah, she is prohibited from having any physical contact whatsoever with men, including her husband. The time of separation varies from tradition to tradition, but most Orthodox Jews observe it for a total of 12 days. Remember that last part. How many days? How many days? Okay, 12 days. 5 days they assume for the actual menstruation, and there's 7 additional days to become pure in some way. I don't know how it works. But 7 additional days after the end of menstruation are required by the book of Leviticus. So when her time of the month did come, when her period did arrive, she set up a tent out in the front yard of her house. And she camped there for 3 of the first 12 nights. She figured after 3 nights she had a good feel for how it felt to actually sleep out there. And again, this is based on Leviticus. You should not sleep in the same bed as somebody else, because if you do, they become unclean. And she draws reference to this book, The Red Tent. Has anybody here read The Red Tent? The Red Tent is a story. It's a fictional story about the children of one of the patriarchs. I want to say Jacob. Okay, you'll say Jacob. And these women would set up this tent, and this was the menstruation tent, and they would gather together, and they would sleep there and support each other because they weren't allowed in the main tent of the family. So she set up this tent, and you can see things in there. She's got her copy of The Red Tent. You see what's down there in the bottom right corner? That is a stadium cushion. one of those ones that you would take to a ball game. You sit them on the bleachers because those bleachers aren't really that comfortable. So she did all of this, not because she's trying to make fun of any tradition, but it doesn't mean that she can't have a little bit of fun with it. By the time she got to April, she had been doing this for a few months, and she's in a small city, a small town in Tennessee. And all of her family, all of her friends, they knew what was going on by this time. So when they saw the tent go up in the front yard, well, they knew, well, it's Rachel's time of the month. Even more awkward, though, even more awkward is she carried that stadium cushion with her because she didn't want to defile any seats. So when she would go out in public, she would take it with her and she would sit on it. And of course, people would ask her, why do you have this cushion with you? And she would tell them, because I've got my period, of course. Right, right. And to highlight it all, you're not having as much fun with this as I was, okay? The most awkward thing that she describes was going to a wedding during her time of the month. She went to a wedding, a good friend was getting married, and she talks about how she had to, you know, people want to shake your hand or give you hugs if they haven't seen you for a while, and she talks about ducking them and doing some ninja kind of moves to avoid people that are coming at her with their hands extended. She's avoiding them, and people are asking, what's going on? Why won't you hug me? Do I smell that badly? And this is what she writes. She says, the upside was Dan and I had an excuse not to dance. No one harassed us about seeing our truly horrid dance moves once we informed them that we couldn't touch because the way of women was upon me. In fact, no one really talked to us at all after that. I could so see some people in my family doing that. All right. So why do I tell you all this awkward story? The reason I tell you all this awkward story is to come to one single paragraph. The highlight of that chapter for me is found on page 166. Rachel Held Evans writes, "It was weird not touching my own husband. I never realized or appreciated how often we communicated through the silent but assuring gestures of a squeeze of the hand, a head on a shoulder, a back scratch, a high five. The human touch is a powerful connective bond, and going without it can be strangely isolating. We kept forgetting about the rule, accidentally resting our arms on one another before one of us would suddenly shout, 'No touching!' And we'd jerk back our hands away like we were in a prison scene in Arrested Development." How long can we go without human touch? How long can we go without that reassuring hand on the shoulder, the high five, the shaking of the hand saying, I see you as an equal, I see you as a brother? How long did Rachel Held Evans go without touching another person? 12 days. Thank you, John. John's listening. How long would this woman have gone without touching another person? 12 years. Many people make the connection that this woman had suffered from this bleeding disorder as long as that child had lived, but I think more important is that she had gone 12 years without another human touch. Real quick again from Leviticus 15. It doesn't just talk about menstruation. It goes on to say this. When a woman has a discharge of blood for many days at a time other than her monthly period, or has a discharge that continues beyond her period, she will be unclean as long as she has the discharge, just as in the days of her period. Any bed she lies on while her discharge continues will be unclean, as is her bed during her monthly period. And anything she sits on will be unclean, as during her period. Anyone who touches them will be unclean. They must wash their clothes and bathe with water, and they will be unclean until evening. 12 years. So when Jesus is walking through the town and she hears that he is going to do some healing of this young girl, she says, well, I've got to try it. I've got to risk this. I've got to go and see him. And she knows that if she puts her hands on Jesus, that he will become unclean. She knows that that is taboo. That is not acceptable. So what does she do? She says, if I only touch his garment. Read that again. Oh, you can get away without touching the person. If you touch just their garment, that's a loophole. So she says, if I just touch his garment, I will be healed. So as Jesus passes, she reaches out, she touches the fringe of his garment, and she feels the healing take place. But she's not the only one that feels something happen. Jesus says, "Who touched me? I felt the power leaving my body." And it can literally be translated, "I felt somebody stealing my power. And this woman comes forward. She says, it was me. And Jesus sits her down. He says, give that power back. He says, what are you doing? Like, how dare you touch me, you unclean thing, you. No, no. What does Jesus do? He ministers to her. He says, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering. Crossing barriers. Crossing barriers. Now, I have no idea how long this encounter took. But remember that first story. Jairus is still waiting. I imagine Jairus sitting there, you know, he's looking at his watch, and, you know, he didn't have a watch, but he's looking at his watch, he's checking the time, he's probably doing that potty dance that you see kids do, you know, whenever they, the time come in. Now, come on, Jesus, we got somewhere to be, we got somewhere to go, you know, my daughter's over here, she's sick, and she may not make it, and somebody comes to them and says, no, don't worry about it, it's too late, she's gone. Jesus says, do you have faith? Let's go see her. They go into the house after people mock them and jeer them a little bit. And Jesus, what does he do? He doesn't just talk to this little girl. He says, Talitha kum. But he doesn't just say the words to her. He touches her. He reaches down and grabs her hand. This girl was dead. Any guesses what that means in the Old Testament to touch a dead person? That means you become unclean. Jesus crosses barrier after barrier after barrier. When Jesus sees somebody that needs the love of God, when he need him, when they need Jesus Christ himself, he is willing to step over these barriers and come and meet people where they are. And I mentioned to the kids, indeed, there are some barriers in this world that are helpful. There are some that come in handy. There are some that are there for your safety. This is one that we took. We took the long way to Ohio this time. We drove up to Niagara Falls. And if you go to the edge of the falls, there's this fence that's right there. There's this barrier there. And guess what? That's a good barrier. Because if you don't, look how close, I mean, my daughter is right there by the edge of the falls. That barrier is going to save a lot of lives. That's a good barrier. But so often we have man-made, human-made barriers that we allow to keep us from helping other people, from loving other people, from showing them the love of Christ, from sharing our faith with them. Barriers like color of skin, the thickness of your wallet, your socioeconomic perspective or position, your political affiliation. So many of these human-made things become barriers. And I believe Jesus calls us to break those down, to step out of the box, tear up the tape, whatever it might be, cross the barriers to show people the love of Christ. Let's pray. God of love, we admit today that we often find ourselves boxed in by human-made barriers. We keep the love of Christ to ourselves rather than stepping out to help people, whether that be helping them to feel better, to heal them, to help them financially or physically, emotionally or spiritually. Lord, help us to just step over those boundaries, to break through them altogether. For most of these boundaries are just human-made and they are not helpful at all. Lord, may we respect the boundaries and barriers that are there to protect, but may we burst through the ones that keep us separate and nada. We pray these things in Christ's name. Amen.